I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today we are reaching back into our archives to share some of our favorite stories with women over 40. Each of these women has started something special, and we wanted to make sure our new listeners didn't miss out on hearing these conversations. Old or new to the podcast, we hope each of these stories inspires you to consider your own possibilities. Enjoy. Pursuing your future doesn't end at 40. In fact, it may mark the beginning of knowing who you are, what you're capable of, and what you really want. But knowing what's next and how to get there can be a challenge, especially when old narratives play on repeat. Liberty Road is here to share stories so that you can consider your possibilities, pursue your purpose, and move into your future with intention. I'm your host, Netta Jones, and we're here to listen, learn, and liberate dreams one episode at a time. It's great to be with you guys again this week. And I'm excited to introduce Courtney Cowan to you. And I can't wait for her to tell her delicious story of her business. Courtney, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. And why don't you tell us a little about Milk Jar Cookies?
Great. Well, Milk Jar Cookies is an artisanal cookie shop in the heart of Los Angeles. And we make 15 flavors of cookies by hand from scratch every day. And we bake them off in small batches from morning till night. So everything is always fresh. And in addition to the brick and mortar shop, we also deliver citywide and ship nationwide. And we opened, it'll be 5 years ago in April.
Wow. So there's no excuse not to have a milk jar cookie. You guys have thought of every way to deliver that into our mouths.
Absolutely. We make it very easy for you to get our cookies.
And I love that, actually. Why don't you give us some background? How does one launch into the cookie business? Like, what did you do before you did this? Or have you always been making cookies?
Both. I've always been making cookies. I as a child, loved the process of, you know, baking. My mom taught me the basics of it. And any spare time I had, I was making cookie dough, a lot of times simply just to eat the cookie dough, if we're being honest. I think around the age of 11 or so, I started realizing the science of baking and cookie dough, and that fascinated me. And in my teens, I came up with my own twist on a chocolate chip cookie recipe to, you know, much love from my friends and family. And so I really loved the happiness that brought the people around me. And so in 2005, I had been working for several years and bringing them in to the office, and people would mistake them for, you know, bakery purchased cookies. And so I, in 2005 was like, maybe there's something to this. And so, you know, single girl in my 20s, nothing better to do at night than bake cookies. And so I started experimenting with lots of different flavors, and I loved that process and the creative outlet that it provided. And decided, you know what, I'm going to start an online cookie company and deliver them around town whenever, you know, I can. And the nature of television is that you have, I was a post-production supervisor, I skipped that part, in hour-long dramas for television. And so the nature of that work is that you have hiatuses, or, you know, your show can get canceled as well. So there tends to be some periods of downtime. And so anytime I would have that downtime, I was like, all right, it's cookie time. I'm just going to focus on the cookies and I'm going to see what I can do. And really, so then I, you know, I started a little website and was taking orders via fax at the time. I did not have online ordering.
For all
of those
who don't know what a fax is, we'll draw a little picture on the show notes.
Exactly. yeah, I turned a little closet in my one-bedroom apartment into the headquarters for my cookie company, which at the time was called Sweet Cheeks Cookies, after a pet name I have for my sister. And I would deliver cookies around town, and every time I would make a delivery and, you know, share that moment with that customer where, you know, these people are getting cookies. Most of the times it was a surprise and a gift, and there was so much joy in their face and in that moment. And that brought me so much happiness, and yeah. I really loved that. And so, you know, my dream had always been to be a producer in television, and I suddenly had this new dream where I was like, I want to own a cookie shop, and I want to be able to spread this joy and this love on a daily basis, and yeah. have a place where I can host people and share a little bit of happiness. So,
I appreciate you saying the new dream part. I think a lot of times we have a dream, we hang on to that dream. Other things, whether it's circumstantial or just, mm-hmm. you know, our heart changes, our desire for something changes, enters mm-hmm. in, and we feel for some reason beholden to the original dream. And I like that yeah. you were able to identify, hey, maybe there's something else that I want to do that trumps this other thing. Or maybe because I've been in this world of TV production, I'm realizing that it doesn't satisfy me in a way that this cookie thing satisfies. What I'm experiencing when I see the joy on people's faces, when I'm experimenting with recipes, is bringing me something I didn't anticipate. And so I appreciate you articulating it in that way, because I think it gives our listeners and even myself freedom to think about, what is the new dream? What is mm-hmm. what is the thing that is before me now? And what, you know, maybe I don't have to hang on to what I thought the dream may have been. So,
yeah. And I went back and forth for 7 years. So that was 2005. I started that. And, I really did love my job, as well. I loved the being involved in TV shows and the mechanics of that. And, it took me 7 years to finally decide, like, okay, it's time for me to give this cookie dream all that I have and see what it can be. And I do remember a very pivotal moment that kind of pushed me forward, which was I was on a particularly difficult TV show and was working lots and lots of hours and did not feel as though I was doing justice. You know, I wasn't doing well by my cookie company. And but in order to do well by that, something would have to give, and I never wanted to not be a good employee and not do a good job there. And so I told my husband, I was like, you know what, I think I just need to put the cookies away for a while. I need to just not worry about this because it's not making me proud. And it makes me sad to not be able to do it. So I think I just need to get everything out of the house. So I packed up all the stickers and the packaging and all that stuff, and I put it in the garage. And it not 2 days passed before I was like, oh my God, what did I do? That was a terrible mistake.
I need the cookies back. I hate them.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, that now I know. Like, I really need to give this some credence and give it my all. And so
let me ask you a question right there, because I think there are people listening who perhaps have started some sort of side hustle or are thinking about, how do I launch this, whatever this is, on the side, because they do in fact have a full-time job. Did the fact that your career at that time allowed for these hiatuses and these moments, these breaks in time where you could play with the idea of a cookie company, launch that, get that off the ground, experience what that was all about. Did that provide something for you that ended up being essential in determining which one you ended up choosing? And how, for somebody who doesn't have that opportunity, how might you recommend they continue to pursue a side hustle? Let's say it's somebody who's got a 9-to-5. How do they pursue that that side hustle so that they can have what you had, which is a little bit of both, whether it's to get the one off the ground while still earning an income or just to see if perhaps they really want to do that second thing? Because it sounded like you talk about doing that for 7 years, that really informed your ultimate decision, having that opportunity to do both.
Yeah, I think it, those little pockets of time, and I, you know, there were also a lot of nights where, you know, I was doing it while I was working as well. So I would get home at 10 o'clock at night and have 12 dozen cookies I had to bake. And I would bake the cookies, take a nap while they cooled, get up, package them and drive them wherever they had to go before I had to be at work at 9 o'clock the next morning. And so those moments, as well as the ones where, you know, I was free to just do the cookies, collectively, I think helped me realize how much I did love it. And they gave me the confidence because I was getting my product into people's hands and getting feedback. Sometimes there were a couple of times that the feedback wasn't great. But you know, that helped me just as much as the one saying like, oh my God, this is the best cookie I've ever had. I love these cookies. And so I was able to gain confidence / learn from it. And, you know, it just was all of that together was I think extremely beneficial and extremely informative. And then as far as ways for people to use the time that they do have, if they have a 9-to-5, I think anything they can do to, you know, especially if it's a product based business, is to get it in people's hands, you know, and get that feedback. And if that means, you know, it's probably going to mean a lot longer days for you because you will now have a 9-to-5 and a 5 to midnight or whatever. But it will be, it will teach you so much, and it will not just about your product and about, you know, what works and what doesn't, but also if you love it or not enough to really go for it.
And I think for many entrepreneurs, or most entrepreneurs, they would say to you, they're not ever working a 9-to-5 anyway. So it's probably good practice in putting in those 20-hour days when needed. Mm-hmm. do I hear an amen?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So I think that some of that is just kind of understanding, is this a hobby that you're playing with the idea of monetizing, or is this really what you want to do for a business? Is this truly what you want to be all about? And I think it provides that opportunity when you're absolutely sort of doing it on the side. How did you talked about kind of, I think you said at age 11, really being fascinated by the science of the recipe development. Mm-hmm. How did you, I mean, what did you know about recipe development before launching? Was it just those years as a child and years in the kitchen with your mom? Or was there something that you sort of began to study to develop your various flavors or the texture or whatever it is that makes milk jar, specifically a milk jar cookie?
It was a lot of trial and error. I love to experiment and get my hands in there. And so, you know, for instance, around the age of 11, the moment I'm talking about when I say that is I was at a friend's house and I was, of course, like, let's make cookies. So they did not have any baking soda. And I was like, well, it's only a teaspoon. It can't be that big of a deal. So we make the cookie dough without the baking soda, and we had puddly messes. And I remember talking to my mom about it. I was like, why does it matter? And just, that was when I learned about the leavening agent and how that was, you know, and yada, yada, yada. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's so crazy. And so that kind of got the wheels spinning, realizing that, you know, there's a reason that it's, you know, 2 cups of this and 2 eggs and, you know, that they're all of this plays together in a way. And if something is off, then it's going to change the consistency or the taste or how it bakes. And so I, you know, still to this day, like whenever I'm doing coming up with new flavors, I will just try different things. And, you know, I know mainly the, you know, again, the basics of it. And I know that, you know, if you add more flour, it's going to do this to it. If you add more of this, but, you know, so, and I'll do a lot of reading, on that, but I, for the most part, I just get in there and cause I know my cookies now after all these years. And I love just seeing how I can play with that. So sure. I'll get in there and just, I remember the one that has been the most difficult, additional cookie flavor that I came up with thus far is the pumpkin pie. Like that was just, I probably went through 12 different batches of that because it just was not, there was, you know, cause the pumpkin is so liquidy and then there was this. And so I was just, that one was really a shining moment of science of baking really. Cause I was like, wow, this one is tough. Like it's just not working out so well.
But I'm sure once you're able to perfect those, the ones that are most difficult, they probably end up doing really well for you because it's one that other cookie makers have found to be difficult and perhaps just abandon perfecting it. And so you end up having this edge.
Yeah. Definitely one of our more popular for sure.
What is your most popular cookie?
Chocolate chip.
Oh gosh. Yep. We just can't, I know, get away from everybody's favorite.
It's funny because the classic chocolate chip is our biggest seller, followed very closely by banana split, which is my craziest flavor. So it's really funny because people are like, classic, but then also the most adventurous. So it's been very interesting. Yeah.
I can't help but listen to you tell this story and recall a Friends episode where Monica, do you know what I'm about to say?
I think so.
Phoebe says to Monica that she has her grandmother's recipe, Nestle Toulhaus. And then she loses the recipe. And then Monica finds out in the end when Phoebe, I think, tells her the name, and then Monica realizes that it's Nestle Toulhaus. But it's this great moment of just like the chocolate chip cookie is the ultimate thing that we're all after. And I was like, well, I mean, you know, Phoebe's antics aside, America loves a good chocolate chip cookie. So you're validating that. So
exactly.
In the past, we've seen this sort of morphing and transitioning a bit, but you know, brick and mortars would start out. They would sell in their, you know, to their local communities, whatever product, and we're talking about food products specifically here, and then decide, gosh, this popularity can be scaled if I take this online. You did it the other way around. You were selling online and then decided that you wanted to open a brick and mortar. Why did you do that? What was the intention of, after having the success of online sales, deciding I need a location-specific place where people can come in and taste the cookies or shop? What was that all about?
It was about, first of all, opportunity. So when I had done it online simply because it was a side business. It was a side hustle for sure. And so I did not have the, you know, the freedom to throw myself into it completely while I was still attached to the entertainment industry and to that job. And so once I decided that I really wanted to go for this and do it, I definitely weighed the different options. You know, there is the just online and use a shared kitchen that you rent by the hour. There's food truck, there's brick and mortar, et cetera. And so I, you know, weighed all of those and kind of budgeted out each one, as well as thought about what my intention was. And the only right way for me to go about it was to do brick and mortar, because it was extremely important to me that I like the hosting of people. Mm. So it's not just about, you know, just the product. I really wanted to create a place that was full of love and was welcoming and warm and would give, you know, the community a little respite from reality and come in and have this, you know, delicious product in a very loving and warm environment. And so that was really what drove me to do that. And so and in the process, once I decided I wanted to go full on with it and leave entertainment behind and really take the leap, I changed the name of the business to Milk Jar Cookies. And you know, I felt that it, I couldn't get the trademark on Sweet Cheeks, first of all.
I'm so afraid then, of who else had that name, but anyway.
Yeah. And so I couldn't get that. So then I just started thinking about, you know, new names. And so I went through that whole process and branded and kind of started it fresh. So it was, I had the experience of, you know, Sweet Cheeks allowed that the recipe development and to, you know, really see if people were responding to my product, et cetera. But then once it came time to really go for it, I kind of just started fresh, and started with that and put all of my time and energy into, you know, creating this new brand and then, you know, building out a brick and mortar space. And then once we were open, I didn't actually add online ordering for Milk Jar until we'd been open about a year. Because I wanted to.
So as far as the cookie audience was concerned, mm-hmm. you actually with the specific brand of Milk Jar, you did begin with brick and mortar and then take that online, even though mm-hmm. you had had Sweet Cheeks online before.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Let me ask a question about kind of seasonality. So mm-hmm. here you've got this now brick and mortar. And well, first of all, let me back up on something. You said something that I've heard throughout this interview so far that you've sort of been delivering joy, whether it was when mm-hmm. you were doing it as a side hustle and delivering the cookies to people while you were working in television production, or the importance of having the brick and mortar and wanting people to come into this loving space. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me, and not to be cheesy, but it seems to be that part of your recipe is to provide that. Did you know that when you started, or was that just a, gosh, this really feels good, I want to make sure that we continue to deliver this? Or was it something intentional that you set out to do? In addition to selling cookies, you were sort of selling or providing or offering this communal space where people could sort of download, if you will, you know, or unload, I guess is, we can't mm-hmm. say download anymore because it means something altogether different. But was that intentional, or was it a byproduct of selling the cookies?
It was definitely intentional. I did not know if people would respond to it mm-hmm. In the way that they have, but it was certainly my intention to be different in some ways. Like a lot of bakeries out here are very much, you know, the space is just get you in, get you out. There's mm-hmm. not seating for a lot of people. There's not, you know, it's not. It just is. It doesn't provide that that invitation to sit and stay for a while. And I really wanted, I did not want it to be like that. So I was intentionally looking for a place that would be big enough that I could do that. So we have seating for 18, we have 5 tables, one big 6-person table, and then, you know, smaller ones, in the shop. And we have, outdoor, a couple tables outside. And, it was definitely, you know, as far as everything from the decor to just the space itself and the capacity for people, that was all part of my vision. Was to certainly make it that way. Yeah,
We're glad that that was part of your vision. That's a good vision. So to go back to what I was starting to say, the business of cookie making, I have to believe, is somewhat seasonal. Is that right? Or I mean, you must sell more during the holidays, right?
Yes, December is by far our busiest and most insane, intense month. It is also our favorite. It is so much fun. The insanity, I mean, I can't even describe December at our shop.
But it is,
I mean, there is just like flour and packing peanuts flying. It is nuts. And then Valentine's Day, like I would say, the holidays are a marathon. Valentine's Day is a sprint. Like it's like Christmas in, you know, in the span of 2 days, like the 13th and 14th of February are always insanity. And we do have, you know, there's patterns for sure. You know, like July is typically a slow month. People are on vacation, you know, whatever. But we, it, there definitely is, you know, we are certainly very busy all year round, which is fantastic. And we, every month, you know, since we've opened has been 20 to 30% bigger than the month, you know, that same month the year before. And so it's definitely continued on a trajectory that is positive. And it, you know, sometimes we think like, yeah, I thought January is typically slow this year. That was not the case. It was very busy all January. So you're just kind of,
that's awesome. That's good.
Yeah.
News.
But then there can be days where it's just like, for whatever reason, it's a lot slower, but then the next day is insane.
Yeah.
So it, yeah, it's predictable, but unpredictable from time to time.
So I want to get back to that kind of sales growth when we get into the second part of the, interview, but I did want to ask in a company that is somewhat seasonal, it sounds like your growth is consistent and constant for the general business. But when you have those opportunities where it's a little bit slower, so right after Christmas or during the summer months or after, you know, Valentine's Day, what do you do within your operations to sort of take advantage of that, I dare I say downtime, because like you said, you've had this sort of consistent growth. But what do you do? Is that a time for new recipe development? Is that a time for marketing? Are you taking advantage of those times to do something other than the creation, the baking, the, you know, the shipping of cookies? Because I have to believe there are a lot of people, again, listening who have this sort of seasonal business and perhaps don't have some of the consistent sales that you have. And kind of it's nice to hear from people as to how they take advantage of the downtimes. So I'd love to hear that from you.
There's a lot of things we do with it. You know, in the store with staff wise, that's when we, you know, we get our deep cleans in and we try to stock up on, you know, ribbon, because each box, when we sell them, you know, by the box, they, everything's tied up with a lace ribbon. And so all of that, you know, has to be cut. And so there's a lot of things that we can do, like side tasks that they can get ahead on. So we'll, you know, we start cutting holiday ribbon in August so that can be done, because it's just, you know, it's time consuming. And you know, there's like little things like that the staff can be doing. I take that opportunity to also check in with the staff, and I will have like download sessions with my shop manager, and you know, what's working, what do you guys need, what, you know, how did that go, what, you know, what, here's what I think, you know, and what I learned, how was it on your end, how, you know, what, like, just kind of really check in with them. I use it to try to get ahead on, yeah, some, you know, photo shoots and recipe development, and, you know, try to do all of those. It's really time for the fun stuff.
Yeah. I can imagine, as you were talking, I was like, it's time to think and dream and really be creative, because it's sort of go time during those other seasons. Do you try and pepper those down times with maybe, more public relations, or do you try and fill in those gaps from a marketing or communications end?
I dream about doing that.
Well, you have like some really great press. I mean, you guys have done a really phenomenal job, and I don't mean that to say that it isn't all deserved, because the cookies are so amazing. But a lot of times, brands in those first 5 years can miss that opportunity, and you guys have just. You haven't missed a beat. And so I'm wondering if you've particularly padded the down seasons with that, but it sounds like that's not the case.
I rarely say no to, you know, like I'll have, you know, a high school blogger email through the website, and, you know, and it'll be December 12th, and she'll want to be, you know, she'll want to write a little article for her thing. I try to take part in all of those things that I can. And so, you know, with the PR company, was wonderful, throughout the year of getting, you know, as many opportunities as possible. with that. And then, you know, we get a lot of things, like I said, just submissions through the website. And so, they don't always come at the most convenient times. You know, it's like, there will definitely be things where people want, you know, me to write an article in December. And I'm like, blah, I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I got to do it. You know, yeah. It's like, it's really wonderful. So, so I think, it hasn't worked out necessarily where I can, you know, pick and choose where, in the calendar year that those fall, but, that sounds really great.
it always sounds ideal, yeah. Right? It's like, it looks great on paper, but that's just not the reality.
No, it's a great idea. It's a great idea.
let me go back to the fact that you have these two platforms. You have the brick and mortar and you have the online sales. Mm-hmm. Does one sort of inform the other, and or do both inform each other? So by that, I mean, do you find that people who are enjoying online sales then end up in Los Angeles and come to your store because it's almost like a destination, or vice versa, where people happen upon the store, come in, enjoy it, and then say, oh my gosh, you mean I can just order these and get them online? Do those tend to serve one another, or do they tend to be their own sort of silos of customers?
They definitely serve one another. There's certainly crossover, which I always find so gratifying. I love that. And, you know, there will be, yeah, people, you know, will come into the shop. They'll just be walking by and, you know, I've never stopped in. So they come in, they get a cookie, and then they see our little sign that says, you know, order, we ship nationwide, or order today, or whatever. And they're like, oh my gosh, no way. Oh, I should send my grandma cookies. Yeah. And then they'll, you know, order online. And we certainly have people that have received them in Nebraska as a gift, and they are out here on vacation and they make a point to come and see us. And I love that so much.
Yeah. I figured as much, given how mm-hmm. adorable the shop is, that it would provide, you know, some destination traffic, people who are coming into town. And because Los Angeles is the kind of city that people actually visit, you're bound to have that. I think you might not have that if you were in, and I'm not going to name a particular city because I don't want anybody to be mad at me, but something that is, you know, maybe in one of the Dakotas, let's say, you might not have that ability to be a destination. But because you do, mm-hmm. it sounds like you've taken advantage of that.
Yeah, it's lovely. And sometimes, you know, we try to ask people how they heard about us, you know, as much as we can, especially when they say like, oh, we're here from wherever. And, you know, we just had to come. And it's a variety of places, that people, you know, they will have either heard about it from somebody a friend of theirs who lives in Maine, who follows our Instagram, but has never been. And they're like, you should go, 'cause you're going to LA. And, you know, it's just like, it's wonderful.
That's a really interesting point too. I think in the age of social media, we have this, it's sort of counterintuitive. We think that because of it, we can do everything online, but in fact, it drives us to something that we're starting to notice more and more that we desire, which is the online connection. So mm-hmm. in essence, you have this national megaphone, and it's driving people into the location because they want more of what you're selling. They want the experience, not just the taste of the cookie. They mm-hmm. want the whole thing. There's something that you're delivering to them that they're not able to get through the mail. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love how that is playing on itself. And also, I love anything that shows us that social media is just a vehicle for real connection. And that we're not ending it there. We're not limiting it there. I know that from reading a little bit about you, that you've had to say, you know, so you've had to put off some things in life to do all that you've done to start this company. What would you say has been the hardest part of launching this business? I like our listeners to sort of get a sense of, okay, here's reality. It's not just pretty and, mm-hmm. you know, lace packaged or cookies, not donuts. I don't know. Maybe one day you'll be doing donuts too, but,
I ate my fair share of donuts.
See, the donuts inspire the cookies. It's a part of it. But what would you say to that woman who's listening about what's been the hardest part of launching your business? And now that you're established, what continues to be the hardest part, or is now a new hardest part?
Yeah, it's, I mean, just that word, it is, it's very hard. Mm-hmm. It's very hard. And it is not for the faint of heart. And it's not for, you have to be dedicated and you have to really want it, because there are going to be days where you're going to say, I hate this. But you got to keep pushing. And first opening, you know, I remember reading books that were, you know, start your own bakery. And it was like, be prepared to work 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I already do that because I'm in television and that's just what we do. And so I was like, okay, got that down. 12 hours is like, you know, no, it's 18, it's 20. It's sometimes, you know, Valentine's Day this year, I worked 39 hours straight. I worked from 5 a.m. on the 13th until 9 p.m. on the 14th. So it just does not, it doesn't stop.
Do you drink coffee? What's happening over there?
My adrenaline receptors are really strong.
I'm so glad. And those recipients of your Valentine cookies.
Yeah. I actually only drink one cup of coffee a day, believe it or not.
Wow.
I'm very good at just like putting my blinders on and put my head down and just going for it.
Just getting it done.
Get it done. But I think when I first opened, you know, ignorance is bliss. And so I was prepared to work, you know, really hard, and I didn't have any idea what I was really doing. But I just followed my gut, and I just kept, you know, all I knew is I had to make as much cookie dough as I could possibly make and bake as many cookies. And then, you know, my husband and our friends were out helping customers. And that was the first like 3 days. And then there was no way we could continue on unless we hired some people. So we hired a couple of people a week and a half in. And it just, at that point, the challenge was, and what made it so hard was just the sheer labor, the intent. I mean, it's very labor intensive. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, I was doing all of the dough making myself and baking and trying also to make sure that I was paying, you know, I had to pay the bills on time and I had to do all of these other things. And so, that period of time, it was very hard physically. And, you know, sleeping maybe 4 hours a night, 5 hours a night. But there was so much excitement and so much adrenaline that I was like, this is amazing. You know, like, I can't believe there's always that silver lining to that. And you're like, okay, well, this is, you know, this is amazing. People are responding to this and we have customers and we, you know, we're busy and this is so great. And then, you know, 6 months goes by and you're like, wow, it's still that way. Wow. And then a year goes by and you're like, okay, now I have 6 people on my staff, but wow, I'm still, and it just, you know, the good part of that and the part I try desperately every single day, even 5 years in now, to look at is that I'm experiencing a good problem. You know, yeah. we have a steady stream of business. We have a very loyal following and we are growing every day and every month. And so that presents a new challenge. You know, so now the hard stuff is I have a team of 18 and making sure that, you know, I am leading them in a way, you know, that is doing well by the company and by them and by me. And, you know, and trying to, we have opened another facility that's our shipping and delivery facility. And so that has come with its own host of challenges and trying to make sure that we are designing a workflow between the two locations that is efficient and, you know, it's taking stress away and, not adding to it. And so it's just, you know, there's a new challenge every day. And then, you know, there's the nature of food is that, you know, you can't just make a bunch of stuff ahead of time. Like it all has to be fresh. And that's what people love about us. But there's, as we grow, you know, we're more humans, and with more humans come more opinions and more, you know, expectations. Yeah. And so it's very hard to manage all of that and make everybody happy all of the time. But, you know, I think I'm very proud of the fact that we are doing a very good job at maintaining the quality and the experience that I set out to create at the very beginning, 5 years in, and, you know, a bunch of cookies later, it's still extremely high quality and people are still getting a really great customer service experience. And, you know, I'm very proud of that. And I have a very happy team. You know, and again, we've had, this year's been particularly challenging. And so with just things that are totally out of your control, you know, you think you have your whole business and everything is, you know, that you are in control of is running well. And then, you know, the freezer goes out or the mixer goes down, or, you know, there's always challenges.
Sure. And you hear people who have grown say, you know, big sales, big success, big problems, you know, mm-hmm. big teams, big opportunities for, you know, new thoughts and new creativity, big problems. Like that's part of the territory. And I hear even in your story of talking about just keeping up with baking more cookies in the beginning. And now it's, you're not just in there with a, you know, spatula mixing dough. You're now managing 18 people, 18 personalities, developing systems and processes that make you able to maintain that quality control and that customer service that mm-hmm. made you famous to begin with and got you on the map and is keeping you on the map and is allowing you to grow. But now you're in charge of that. So often entrepreneurs, need to go in with their eyes wide open. And I say to them, I'm putting on a little bit of my consulting hat, but, you know, the thing that mm-hmm. you love to do, the thing that you want to do is not always going to be, and the thing that you get to do. And the more mm-hmm. successful you are, the irony is the less you get to do that thing. And so I want to move us into this next section where we get to pick your brain a little bit, and all those people listening who are interested in having the problems you have can mm-hmm. get some advice. So I think we're really getting a sense of, hey, if we want to launch this product-based business, these are some of the problems that we might have. What would you say to a listener in terms of, armed with your experience, what would you say to them in terms of ways to overcome those problems, or ways to anticipate those problems?
Stay sharp, first of all, and just know that, yeah, and I'm a very big planner. I have a way things are, and that's great to some extent, but I have had to just make peace with the fact that things are going to go wrong, and things are going to go wrong regularly. And that, funny enough, that like allows me to do part of what I love the most. I love strategizing. I love mm-hmm. Getting creative and thinking creatively of how to overcome a problem. And so with the good, I get to exercise. I mean, with the bad, I get to exercise the good. But yeah, just stay fluid and allow yourself to, to just go with it and seize the opportunity. There, somewhere in each of these issues is an opportunity. You know, for instance, we are experiencing this dispersed pipe right now. Well, we have a party cart that we take to weddings. So yesterday we baked cookies offsite. We put the party cart out on the sidewalk and we had a sidewalk sale. We just like, trucked the cookies over and we like made fun, you know, we like, all right, this is great. Today it's pouring rain. Well, there's a toy shop next door. So we decided, like, they allowed us to come in. So we're having a pop-up shop in the toy store. That's so, awesome. You know, it's just like you just gotta go with it, and you can't allow the challenges to shut you down. You need to allow that to open up another side of your brain and go with it. And I think as far as preparing for them, some of them you can't, you'll never know, you know, you're not ready to, you would never think you'd have to figure some issue out, but you might. And so I think just preparing is just by doing research. I think, you know, as far as preparing for the business itself, research. I absolutely will implore people to do your research, whether, you know, that is, I mean, it's all kinds of things. Like if you're doing, want to open a brick and mortar, go sit out in front of a similar place and count the number of customers that go in, count mm-hmm. the number of customers that come out with a bag in their hand, with a coffee in their hand, you know, just like try to gain as much knowledge and research as you possibly can. And then
I'm so glad that you're saying that, because I think that some people think that that sort of bootstrap mentality, that sort of getting down and dirty is, you know, not sophisticated enough and they don't do it. And I'm always shocked at how many people don't take time to do very basic research. And I'm glad mm-hmm. that you're saying it, because to me, it is the best thing that you can do for your company, to go in armed with as much knowledge as you have. And if you're counting those people, then do the homework of how did they get there and what's the marketing that drove them there and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm always surprised at how much people don't do that. They don't do that sort of homework. Would you say that that had something to do with your early success?
I think so. And I think, I also think another thing you can really do is trust your gut, like stay true to what your vision is for it. So my vision was to craft this, you know, environment that was welcoming and warm and fun and loving, and and also had very delicious cookies. And there's other types of places that I could have allowed to skew my, like, well, maybe I should do that instead, or maybe I shouldn't just focus on cookies. Maybe I should have other sweet treats, but it's like cookies are my thing. That I can make something else, but it's not going to be special. Right. And I felt that I would be better served to focus on what I did well, and that's cookies, and then allow that to be my like canvas, if you will, and come up with all different kinds of crazy, new, fun cookie flavors, you know, that you wouldn't get elsewhere. Sure. So I think, yeah, it's just like, stay true to your vision and don't try to be something that you're not. But at the same time, learn from what's around you. And you know, it's okay to gain inspiration and learn from others, and, you know, talk to people. If, you know, try to get interviewed. I set up a couple of different informational interviews with a woman that owned a donut shop and another one that owned a little coffee shop, and just tried to pick their brains and said, you know, what is it like? What was your biggest challenge? You know, a lot of the questions you're asking me now, I went and asked other women that, you know, were doing it. Not everyone will, you know, say yes and meet with you, but the worst they're going to say is no. So I think doing that, if you can, like seek out other business owners and just kind of talk to them as much as you can. And I love that podcasts are so big now, and that there's so many of these, because you're getting that, you know, and it's like that 5 years ago, this wasn't as, you know, there certainly were not as many to listen to. And so I listen to them all the time and try to learn little, there's always a takeaway from every single podcast you listen to.
And the more vulnerable mm-hmm. and the more open the interviewee can be, the more the listener is going to glean from that. I mean, I think mm-hmm. that's sort of, not to spend too much time on this podcast, but that's really the intention. How can we get you, the listener, to hear all these various ideas and different ways of approaching a business, and with different personalities taking the lead? And mm-hmm. can you see yourself in those, or can you consider your own possibilities mm-hmm. as you listen to those? And I like that you did that research. I like that you asked those women, you know, to sit down with you and ask them some of those hard questions. And I really like that you talked about being focused. I think that a lot of us are trying to be all things to all people, and we sort of miss the mark. Mm-hmm. And I like that you're focusing on cookies. And in fact, you're leading me right to my next question, which is, you know, I feel like there's been this resurgence of sweet treats, cupcakes, donuts, you know, cronuts, whatever variation mm-hmm. you can come up with. We've been trying to satisfy this sweet tooth. And I think it makes it really hard to cut through that noise for a new brand. What do you recommend that our listener might want to consider doing or do, given your experience, to cut through that noise, to get to their target customer, to really kind of show who they are and focus in the way that you've been able to focus?
I think a lot of what people have, I think, responded to with Milk Jar Cookies is that we're very real and we're very genuine. And I think, you know, social media is an insanely helpful tool for business owners now. And while there are, you know, millions of other accounts, if you can just, you know, find a voice and use your genuine voice for the brand, I think people like that. And I'm actually truly a terrible, like, social media person. I run all of our social media, but I don't do hashtags, and I'm sure we can have so many more followers and do all these other things. But I just, for me, it's actually, it's been a wonderful growth tool, but it also is my way of communicating with the customers. And just, mm-hmm. again, it's just another source of a smile or, you know, a little communication between Milk Jar and its customers or its followers. And so I typically will do, you know, a pretty picture and a witty caption, or a, you know, just a little, hey friends, you know, hope you have a great Friday. Right. 'Cause that's the voice of our brand. It's just, you know, friendly. And, we don't do a lot of salesy stuff. We don't do, you know, it's just like a, it's just a, it's a, it's a way of us communicating, I think, is the best way for me to put it.
We're on your social, we're on your Instagram right now, and we're cracking up at the slow-mo picture that you just, so I need our listeners to go see it. It's going to be, the date will be, let's see, it's today. It says it was 2 hours ago. So, hey, listeners, yes. Go back to look at today, March 2nd, and look at the slow-mo of our cookies just for a giggle.
That's us moving from our shop over to the toy store to have our pop-up shop today.
I love that. And I think that's when you talk about a voice, that is your voice, like adding that bit of humor and talking about, you know, your delivery of joy and loving people and all of that, that's coming through. There's another one that Elizabeth just pointed out to me here in the studio, and it's your tic-tac-dough. Like, it just gives us a real sense of who you are, and mm-hmm. we want a piece of that. The fact that we're getting this delicious cookie ends up being the bonus. And then, of course, mm-hmm. when we taste it and we're like, oh my gosh, we can't live without this. This is like crack. Then we buy more and, you know, the craziness continues. So when you talk about your voice, it really comes through. What is the voice of this brand? And what is it that they're selling to me besides this cookie, which I'm not experiencing on social media? I can see it and my senses can imagine what it might taste like, but I'm not experiencing it. Mm-hmm. In its fullness, and yet you're still able to have that sort of success. I think a lot of times we hear people saying, oh, I'm not a lifestyle brand in terms of, or a fashion brand or something that's pretty. I don't have that to deliver on Instagram. And so I don't know if that's really a tool for me. And I think you're a great example of it is in fact a tool. So now you had talked about that 20% and even 30% growth that you're experiencing. And I think a lot of people are hoping that they're going to experience that kind of growth. And it's exciting and it's daunting, but there's something that you have to know and you have to be able to be prepared for. And I think you answered to some degree this question by saying, you didn't use this term, but just staying elastic, that you need to be on your toes. I think your exact mm-hmm. phrase was you need to stay sharp. When you're having that sort of growth, that, you know, you need to sort of strategize each month and think about what do we have to do this time to accommodate our business. What would you say is sort of the first step? What's the first thing we should consider when we see that sort of growth heading our way? And we want to maintain all the things you talked about, consistency, quality control, customer service. What do we do to make sure that we're prepared or shored up for that sort of growth?
I think having a team that is that is excited to be a part of it and that is dedicated is a huge part of that. Yeah. And I have a tremendously wonderful team, and they, you know, even when the craziest of circumstances are thrown our way, they show up every day with a smile on their face and they are ready to tackle a challenge. And they respect each other, and they're very good at working together. And I think because a lot of times, until you can, you know, if you're growing at a consistent pace, you know, you can't, every time you grow, you can't hire someone new, but you know, you eventually, you know, obviously have to add to the team. But until you can add to the team and get someone up to, you know, up to speed on all of the processes and everything, everybody kind of has to rise to the occasion. And that's actually something I deal with a lot of guilt a lot of times, because and I don't really know why, but I am always so afraid that I'm putting, you know, I signed up for this. I signed up to work 20 hours a day. I signed up for all of this. And, you know, bottom line, I don't have a choice about it. You know, sure. I'm in it. And, but, you know, I'm always acutely aware of how the team is doing. And I'm always a little, I never want to ask quote unquote too much of them. And that is hard, because I think, you know, bottom line is that most of the people that I have there are, they will work until the job is done. You know, they're very dedicated, but, you know, and it's, they're obviously getting paid overtime and all those things, but it's, I still don't ever want to burn anyone out.
Sure.
And so it's a very fine line between being overstaffed and understaffed.
How have you been able to build that team? I think we're listening saying that's a really great problem to have. And, you know, kudos to you for being able to grow that team. And I so appreciate your sensitivity to them and, you know, their personal lives and understanding that there is a distinction between them and you. This is your business. And 10 years from now, you're the one that's going to have something to gain, capitalize, benefit from this. How have you been able to put that team together? How did you know, were you hiring people based on the task and you did that really well? Or was it, were you looking at the personality of the person and saying I could train them? What were you doing to hire so well?
I always take into account personality. And, you know, I mean, you're sitting across, it's like speed dating. You have like 5-10 minutes with a person. You're like, I've gotten pretty good at reading people, but, you know, it's, I have always said that I will take a hard worker that wants to be a part of a team and learn something new over someone who has gone to 7 different culinary schools and graduated with honors, because you can't teach a work ethic, and you can't teach kindness. You can't teach teamwork. And so, I truly, and you know, I have an existing team that I have to make sure this person is going to mesh with. And so, you know, I think I've been very lucky. But I have certainly, you know, I've had a couple of hiccups in that area as well. But, I definitely hire on, you know, personality and just desire to be there and be a part of it over any existing skills. When we first opened and I was hiring, basically everybody did everything because we just had to get it done. So people were front of house, they baked cookies. A couple of them learned how to make dough with me because I needed help there. They did, it was just a little bit of everything. So now as we've grown, I've certainly been able to split that up. So we have, you know, 5 dedicated people that just make cookie dough. We have 2 bakers. We have a selection of front of house. We have, you know, and then some supervisors and a shop manager. And, you know, that is working out very nicely for us. So even with the dough makers, though, I said, you know, there's no prerequisite. Like they don't have to, it's good if they, you know, enjoy baking, and it's good if they bake at home and have, you know, at least done it as a hobby and all of that. But if somebody wants to learn that skill and is excited about it and willing to work really hard, then they are absolutely as good a candidate as anybody else.
I like that. And so if you put up a hiring soon, you're going to get all kinds of people coming your way after having said that, because they know
fabulous.
That you're open to the lack of specific skill and the wealth of interpersonal skill is what I'm hearing. And mm-hmm. something that I think is really key and that we can take away from what you said is that often we hire for, you know, the person hiring, let's say in the case of a founder, CEO, entrepreneur, you know, who started this small business, you hire the person that you like, that's going to work well with you. What I heard you say is don't forget about the rest of the staff and how that person is going to fit into that community that's already created mm-hmm. and how they're going to add value to it, participate in it. And it's a way to honor the existing employees as well. And I think that's a really important takeaway. And you said that you've been lucky. And I think just listening to you talk about that, you've clearly created your own luck. You've been sensitive to things that I think a lot of us just don't think about. And so I appreciate that answer. You've talked a lot about managing these long days. You've talked a lot about kind of how crazy it can be. What daily habits, what apps, what online platforms, what are the things that you just cannot live without?
We are huge Google Sheets and Google Docs fans. So we call it the comm, the communication. And, you know, everything that, you know, the order coordinators, any customer, you know, notes about an order or, you know, things around the shop, it all goes in the comm. And so each person, when they come in for their shift, the first 5 minutes of their shift is reading the comm. And so that's like has been a huge thing. We started doing that about a year and a half ago, and it's been wildly helpful.
Yeah.
And there's a morning meeting. I've let the shop manager, she does those now instead of me. And so every morning we have a little powwow for 5-10 minutes and, you know, give them a couple of updates, give them a few things to think about. And then we do a throwback. So it's like, you know, don't forget when you're scooping ice cream, it goes like this or whatever. And so just like we do a throwback. And so that, as far as disseminating information, Google Sheets, Google Docs, huge. I'm such an old lady though. Like I still love, telephone will always be.
What's that?
Exactly. I'm like, that will always be my choice. I would rather talk to someone than email them.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I know that's not always, especially in this day and age, it's not how it goes.
I have a teenage daughter who doesn't know that it's part of that phone and texting device that she uses. No clue.
She could actually speak to someone on the other line.
No, yeah. She has no idea.
Exactly.
I'm like, I'm about to blow your mind. There's a voice that comes through that.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I have a scheduling app called When I Work, and that's how they all get their schedule for each week. And
say that again. It's When I Work.
Yes. One word. So whenIWork.com.
Great. We'll add that to the show notes.
Okay, great. It's wonderful. And that's how they process their time off requests and stuff like that as well.
Oh, that's
and then
a great tool.
Do the schedule that way each, you know, each Thursday night. So that's a very helpful tool. And then, as far as other technological things, ShipStation, that's how we process our shipments, which is wonderful. And that has, we did that started about, I guess a little over a year ago, we started using that, and that has been a game changer. For us.
We like to hear about game changers. We've heard ShipStation a couple times, but I can imagine in your case, that's a great one for you guys to use.
Yeah, it's been huge. I bet. That's great.
I want to ask you a question about, you know, there's so many women sort of embracing entrepreneurship, and it's the exciting kind of times that we're in and people taking a look at what opportunities are really available to them. But then there's this other statistic that's a little bit deflating, which is that we're also failing at record pace. And, you know, there's just the natural statistic is that, you know, 50% are going to fail just off the bat, male, female, whatever, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some things that perhaps we're not considering before we launch. I think, you know, going back to what you said earlier about sitting in front of another shop that's selling a similar product and just counting who's going in and who's coming out with bags and a coffee in hand, and doing some of that due diligence work is probably a great takeaway from this interview. But what are some other things you might say? Hey, consider these things before you launch, and nothing's guaranteed, but it will ensure that you're at least on your way to something that's successful.
I think just knowing knowing that it's going to be hard and you're going to have to dig deep sometimes. And there may be days that you are doing it simply out of obligation and not out of passion, and that's okay. Like, just know that, you know, this too shall pass. And you know, but I think you really have to be going into it. I think I have a little bit of a different view. Like, I didn't go, a lot of people start a business to, you know, with an end game. They want to sell it for $10 million, or they want to, you know, they go in with an exit plan. And I did that. The word term exit plan didn't even cross my mind. And people started asking me that a couple of years ago, and I was like, I guess I die. I don't know.
What a sad, dark conversation.
Like, I don't know. Yeah. But I think that it started as a passion project, and I have thrown myself completely into it, and it, you know, for better or for worse. And I think that sometimes, like, as wonderful as social media is, sometimes it can present business ownership. You know, it's the same thing with life. It's just like, it's everybody's highlight reel, and, you know, not all the in-betweens. And so, that's where I think it's awesome that you're doing what you're doing. And there's, you know, other podcasts that are getting down into, like, the real talk of it, because that is, I think, even more important than the pretty pictures and the, you know, the look, you know, girl power and all of that stuff, because it's, you know, and I'm just as, you know, I think it's all important. It all works together.
No, but I hear you. It's the inspiration is great. The aspiration is great. But if it's not shored up with how do you do it, what's the ugly part? How do we equip people to be prepared for the worst? And expect the best. If they're not shored up in that way, then, you know, what kind of girl power are we actually selling?
Exactly. And I think, you know, I hope that it's, you know, the failure rate turns around, and, you know, and we can see even more incredibly successful. I mean, it's every day I feel like there's a new female owned business that's just like going gangbusters that you read about. And it's so incredible. And I'm so thrilled. And I think that, and I think having each other's back and working together in collaboration is extremely important. And, you know, I actually, there's a toy store right next door to us, female owned. There's a doggy daycare place two blocks down, female owned. There's a dog and cat, like, food supply place very close to us, female owned. And we've all kind of, you know, just bonded together. And we, you know, obviously the ones on our block we knew about, but the others, it was just like through social media and whatever. And so then find those ways to work together and to, you know, seek out those people that you can talk to that really get it too. You know, there's like, as much as my, you know, family loves me and, you know, they're in Indiana, they don't see the day to day here. I tell them about it and, you know, but, you know, it's a very, gosh, this is going to sound it's very sad, but like it can be a lonely position. And I think having those other collaborators around you and, you know, just other people to continue, like, you know, you can do it. I know it's hard. I've been there. Here's maybe try this or, you know, whatever, just to get other ideas from is fantastic. And then, you know, if you don't have that, then find these podcasts and find books, and, you know, there's a lot of really incredible resources out there now that, you know, weren't there even 5 years ago.
I would also say, if you don't have it, create it. And I know you did that at some point. You just said, hey, and you brought some female owned businesses or the business owners into your shop to create that sort of entrepreneurial group opportunity to connect with one another. So I think you can always find, they might not be in your social group, so you might have to extend it to some people you don't know, but even better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because I think those people can bring some objectivity. And yeah. I really appreciate that. I appreciate that you started with the girl power is great, but you know, what are we really doing when we say that? How are we really mm-hmm. providing that? And then ending with this, bring other people together and support other mm-hmm. business owners that are female. I mean, support business owners, period. But really right. identify with those or connect with those women who can identify with you and can share your problems and can say, I've been there and I've done this and this and that to alleviate whatever that issue is. Or it sucks. I'm right there with you. It sucks that I don't have mm-hmm. an answer, but I'm telling you, you can get through this and you can weather this mm-hmm. storm. It's hard to believe that our audience doesn't already know you because you've been so generous with your information, and we can get a real sense of who you are, Courtney, and your personality. So thank you for that. But you're not off the hook. I'm still going to ask you these six questions that we ask everybody, just again, to give our listener just one little more taste of who you are as a person. Okay. I'm going to ask you a quick question and just whatever comes to mind, give us that first answer. So do you prefer a 9-to-5 or a flex schedule?
Oh, well, yeah, it's, I guess I would, oh man, I'm like, again, it's all of it. I would love the 9-to-5 because I would love my evenings and weekends, but a flex schedule.
So it sounds like you're incorporating both all the time in your actual life.
I am.
Okay.
We'll go with that. I'm supposed to fire off quick answers to you.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
you're
oh,
not
geez,
doing it.
I don't know.
You're not
I'm
doing
not doing it.
It. You're,
I'm failing.
Yeah, you're minus one already. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Do you prefer vacationing in the mountains or the beach?
Ooh, I love the mountains.
Okay, we're going to go with that one. And then you kind of touched on this earlier, but do you like working from your home or your office better?
I'm
we know that you don't have an office because your employees have taken it over. It sounds
exactly.
Like.
I'm much more productive at home, but I love being at the shop. Like my mood can completely change when I go up there. My husband calls them my employees my antidote.
Oh, like it's good to have one.
Yeah,
some husbands don't even have that. and then, do you like working alone or with a team?
With a team.
All right. I always say this is the hardest question. We'll see if you think so too. Thai or Mexican food?
Mexican.
Ugh. Nobody has found that hard in the last like five. I'm so disappointed.
I love Thai, but Mexican all day, every day.
Can we anticipate a Mexican cookie coming up anytime soon?
I am working on a little something for a Cinco de Mayo cookie. So,
okay. Is it more on the tequila limey side or is it more on the like Mexican hot chocolatey side?
It's more on the tequila limey side.
Okay. Can I make a recommendation?
Please.
Since I love Mexican hot chocolate, can you come up with something that's chocolatey and hot and like has chili and something like that in it?
I have toyed with that. And okay. So, yes,
I will be your taste tester. I will come down. It. I'll sit next to you all day and taste. That'll be my job for free.
Done.
That's the
I love
kind
it.
Of gal I am. Yeah.
Okay. I love it.
And then this podcast is called Liberty Sessions. Our brand mm-hmm. is Liberty. And our intention is to really liberate women to think about what's mm-hmm. possible and through entrepreneurship to kind of discover what that could be for them. What does it mean for you to be liberated?
I believe for me, it is... Oh man. I mean, it's funny because my feeling of liberation is experienced simultaneous with having more responsibility than I've ever had in my entire life and being accountable to more people. But I think just knowing that, that I'm doing it and I'm doing the very best that I can, every day and that I'm not, I don't know. That's a tough one. And I think it's it can be a catch-22 sometimes. But I think I would say my feeling of liberation has just come from knowing that I took this leap and I have worked tirelessly to make sure that it does not fail. And that to me is, and it's been well received, and that is liberating. I think on the flip side of that, just having 20 spare minutes to go on a walk by myself is liberating. And that is, I need to be better about that. I need to be better about feeling liberated.
Well, you can listen to more podcasts.
Yes.
Here on Liberty Sessions.
Exactly.
And what we'll do is we'll come back to you like in a year from now, and you'll mm-hmm. have both the Mexican hot chocolate cookie, you'll have the Cinco de Mayo cookie, and then mm-hmm. you'll tell us what you think liberation means a year from now. So we'll come back to you, Courtney. You're not off the hook yet. Thank you so much for making time for us today. I have learned so much, and I know our listeners have too, and we really, really appreciate it. So thanks for spending this time with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was really lovely.
Liberty Road is broadcast on all platforms: Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcast, and more. If you like what you've heard, please follow, rate, and review Liberty Road on Apple Podcast and Spotify. It helps us to know if these episodes are inspiring and equipping you to move into your middle third with intention. Liberty Road is created by executive producer Netta Jones, supervising producer Elizabeth Windham, producer Julia Windham, and music by Jack Jones.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.